Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say joined for the first time by Ana Quintana. She is a policy analyst on the Latin America and Western Hemisphere beat at the Heritage Foundation's Allison Center for Foreign Policy Studies. You have probably seen her commenting and her writings in various publications and Fox News and MSNBC and elsewhere. She has been working in this portfolio, informed by her own personal experience with coming, her family's arrival in the Mariel boat lift, for example, into the free world and prizing it, as too few of us who have lived here all of our lives do. Ana, welcome. It's so good to have you with us, and I appreciate the chance to talk with you on the cusp of the president's major address to the Cuban people there. Of course, as our listeners hear this program, it will be afterwards, but I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about what you think he's going to say. But first, again, it's great to have you with us here at Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me. I think what we're going to be expecting is this speech had to have been cleared already by the Cuban government. Otherwise, they would not have agreed to air it on state TV. So, I mean, the kind of quote-unquote rights and quote-unquote freedoms he's going to be advocating for are going to be for greater economic opportunities and, you know, expanding access to the internet, which is all things that are controlled by the Cuban government.
Right. And, lauding, I'm sure, the Cuban commitment to health care and all of the things that we're told.
Oh, like he did
justify,
yesterday, of course.
Yeah, justify the repression in the other space. You mentioned off air that you anticipate that he's also going to have to talk a bit about what happened in Brussels today and the irony, really, of addressing the idea of terrorism in the Cuban capital under the Castro brothers regime. Give us a flavor of that irony, if you would.
Well, I mean, Cuba was recently prematurely taken off the state sponsor of terrorism list because by any which way that you look at the law by which Cuba was added, Cuba does not meet the conditions to be taken off the state sponsor of terrorism list, nor have we ever received any sort of guarantee from the Cuban government that they will never support terrorism in the future. So the irony,
to the
right
contrary,
now,
Ana, isn't it fair to say that there's plenty of evidence that that continues in terms of their activities in Latin America, among other places?
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, Cuba continues fomenting the leftist populist movement throughout Latin America. Hugo Chavez was his mentee. I mean,
narco trafficking, and exactly.
Oh, yes. I mean, and that's the other funny part. I mean, President Obama was saying, you know, we're going to start working together on drug trafficking. How is that possible when the Cuban government at the highest levels has been more than complicit, has been directly involved in drug trafficking? That would be like saying we're going to start working with Iran on counterproliferation programs. That makes no sense.
It does if what you really have in mind is turning a blind eye to what these guys are doing. And as you say, taking them off the terrorism list was a prime example of that. Let me ask you, Ana, as you've seen the president's conduct in Cuba to date, we've had this spectacle of marvelous propaganda photograph for the Cuban regime with the backdrop of Che Guevara's image on a building as he's, listening to the American anthem being played, I guess. What do you think is the message being conveyed by his presence there to the Cuban people, irrespective of what he winds up saying to them, the symbolism and certainly the messaging of the regime going to be long after he's gone?
I mean, it's really that he's turned his back on the cause of Cuban freedom, because if we look, it would be the equivalent of him going to Russia and taking a picture in front of a Stalin portrait, or going to Germany and finding a Hitler portrait and taking it in front of it. For Cubans, Che Guevara and Fidel Castro, who President Obama was saying last night he would not be against meeting, that is our Hitler. I mean, that is who displaced upwards of 2 million Cubans. That is who slaughtered tens of thousands of Cubans. And for the president,
and has enslaved the rest of the
world.
Yeah.
Well, and that's exactly it. And enslaved the remaining 11 million. And for the president, the leader of the free world, to not use the bully pulpit of the White House to extort some greater freedoms for the Cuban people from the repressive Castro regime it's really a dereliction of his duty.
Yeah, it's malfeasance is the way I think of it, in the pursuit of a vain and ultimately meaningless legacy. For America, at least, maybe quite propitious, lucrative, and and uplifting for this odious regime. Our guest is Ana Quintana, a policy analyst at the Allison Center for Foreign Policy Studies of the Heritage Foundation. Her special interest and expertise is in Latin America and the Western Hemisphere. And Ana, one of the things that the president has said from the inception of this this so-called diplomatic breakthrough has been that he can only do so much, that it will require an act of Congress to eliminate the embargo that the Cuban government endlessly denounces, and he's interested in doing that, to be sure. But would you talk about what he's actually doing? Is this another case where there's kind of the phone and the pen, if you will, that the president is incessantly undermining the law rather than upholding it?
Oh, that's exactly what he has explicitly stated, that he does not support the embargo, but then he also does not support Congress's constitutional role in being the body that has to remove the embargo. So what he's doing is he's undermining it to the point where he's rendering it absolutely useless, right? Because one branch of government does not agree with an existing law. So what we're seeing, and what we've seen from Congress, overwhelmingly, there's a bipartisan support in both houses to not lift the embargo. Otherwise, we would have seen the embargo lifted. I mean, when Democrats controlled the Congress, they would have lifted it as well. But clearly, they see that the Cuban government has not met the simple terms of lifting the embargo. Because, you know, the left puppets the embargo as though it was put into place for regime change, and only when the regime is out of power will it be lifted. That's factually inaccurate.
Yeah, I guess it was really to try to contain the malevolence of that regime. And I would argue that it's done a pretty darn good job in doing that. Let me ask you, Ana, one other piece of what the president is doing, of course, is rather shamelessly shilling for American corporations seeking to do business in Cuba. First question, the two parts, really. Is this likely to result in the further exploitation of the Cuban people rather than lifting them up economically and otherwise? And secondly, can that happen at all under the present circumstances by any basis other than the U.S. taxpayer underwrites or at least guarantees the enterprises?
Well, I mean, Cuba is not a free market economic system. It's the Cuban government. So the Cuban economy is held into these state enterprises that are run and operated by the military. Cuba's tourism industry, run by the military. Its agriculture industry. It's, you know, various economic sectors. It's widely operated and controlled by the Cuban government. So these new openings that the president has done by undermining the embargo directly benefit the government, because it is illegal for a foreign company to come in and hire a Cuban employee. That does not exist. It's factually inaccurate. There is no such thing as the private sector. There might be a slight non-state sector, but still heavily people are overwhelmingly reliant upon the Cuban government. And the president, what he's doing, he's puppeting the Chamber of Commerce's this fallacy that they're trying to relate to the business community that there's a market on the island. There is absolutely zero market on the island. The Cuban economy is a deadbeat economy, and it's not because of the embargo, but it's because of the way that the Cuban government runs its economic system, and it's of the vast billions of dollars that Forbes has documented this. Forbes, it's not a crazy right-wing Miami conspiracy. Forbes magazine is not that at all. And it's documented that Fidel Castro is a billionaire, right? So what the Chamber of Commerce wants is for the embargo to be prematurely lifted and for the U.S. taxpayer, for you and I, to finance exports to Cuba. We have no guarantee that the Cuban government will ever pay us back, because, again, the reason that the embargo was put into place was because of the Cuban government's unlawful expropriation, was stealing property from American citizens, at the time valued at $1.2 billion. So we put this embargo in place to protect Americans from having further property seized. That's now valued at close to $8 billion. These are 5,900-something claimants. That issue has remained unresolved. So the embargo should not be prematurely lifted just to benefit a few small business interests.
Ana Quintana, we have to leave it at that for the moment. You will be following closely the further developments of the day and, of course, what flows from this so-called historic summit. We look forward to having you back soon to visit about it and more broadly on what's happening in your very important portfolio of Latin America. Keep up the great work at the Heritage Foundation, and we'll talk again very soon. Rosemary Jenks joins us next. We'll talk about immigration, the lessons of Europe for not only the Europeans, but for you as well. Straight ahead.
go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.